This is the Radio Check Podcast, life in the concert touring industry.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Radio Check Podcast. And it's been a little bit since we've been here and really excited with today's guest. But before we get started here, I just want to ask everybody that downloads these podcasts to leave a review, like them, subscribe and all that stuff. It really helps out. This thing's really growing. We're really building a massive body of work here. It's really phenomenal. Everything that, you know, all the people that have contributed to the show and the outcomes. So please like, subscribe and leave some comments and let's see this thing through and get some more great guests. So anyway, that being said, I am on today with an amazing person. Springo is as he's known. And basically what I want to do is I want to have him introduce our other person online here. I'm not sure if this is the way we wanted to go about this, but that's how I understood it. But anyway, this is going to be a unique conversation with two amazing people in the concert touring industry, two production managers that really need no introduction. But, Springo, you know, it's great to see you. And please, who else do we got here today?
Apparently, there's some guy called Chris Kanzi.
Huh.
You heard of him?
I think I'm related to someone that goes by that name, but I'm not quite sure.
Like him.
How do you know him?
Right. Chris Kanzi has been, first of all, a Red Sox fan. Lo, all these many years. But however, he is a production manager of great fame. And he's always done. I have never walked into a position where Kanzi's name, Chris, I call him Kanzi, that it didn't work. That guy's fucking good. So there you go.
Oh, well, hey, well, what better can you do than that? But yeah, I think I know the guy as well. And he's a huge inspiration to me as well. And, you know, but anyway, so this other guy, Chris Kanzi, what's he got to say?
Hello. It's a pleasure to be on today. How you guys doing?
Welcome. Do we really need you?
Yeah. Actually, no. I mean, I prepared a little bit for this, made a few notes. I got a couple.
So
questions.
Did I?
You let me know if let me know when it's my turn.
Oh. It's your turn.
Springo, my brother. It's so good to see you. Thank you for coming on.
This is the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
You know, we had the great pleasure of spending the last weekend together in Chicago at our dear friend Robert Carone's 70th birthday party. And it was a blast, you know, with Charlie and Anthony and Gino and yourself and so many other people were there. And it was such a great time. I had a blast. And it was really nice to meet your wife, Gay.
Yep.
Awesome.
Take her.
Okay.
Oh, goodness, man. Goodness.
Funny. It's all funny. If it ain't funny...
Yeah, it ain't worth doing if it ain't funny, I guess, huh?
Great.
Well, you know, we used to have a format on the show, Matt, where we would come on and do we throw our format in the trash today?
That was all Springo's idea, and I just winged it the best I could. I had no clue on how this was going to unfold.
Done a good job.
Well, hey, you know, now that I'm talking more than I've probably ever talked in the beginning of any of these podcasts, well, then, you know, Chris is usually pretty good at giving the rundown and the intro. But since we're doing things a little bit differently, Springo, this is the first time I've ever met you. So who are you? What do you do? Why are you on with us today?
Because Kanzi told me to.
Okay.
Yeah. I looked at him and I said, dude, it's your turn.
Yeah. Sadly, your brother and I have been successful, right?
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with, we have zero ego. We've just been really lucky in doing what we do.
Yeah.
And what is it that you do?
Go.
He's a great production manager with lots of experience and, you know, lots of miles under his tires.
Hey, by the by, I've called your brother and said, how do I not fuck this up? It looks like a really scheming thing about guys, but we're all together.
Yeah, we certainly are.
And when one of us fucks up or makes a problem, why didn't we talk to the other guy? So
that's true. That's true. You know, I always say, you know, all we have is our experience. You know, our experience kind of leads the way on every decision we make.
And our friends who will not, they will help us not. Right.
That's true. That,
there's a lot of big guys. Kenzie's, and I have to say that because that's the only way I know him. When I walked into that hotel and there's Kenzie, I'm going, holy shit. I haven't seen Kenzie. But we talk and we trade. And that's what good production managers do is trade.
Yeah. The information's for all of us, man. It really is.
It is.
It's been remarkable, the fly on the wall that I've been on so many of these podcasts and the production managers that I've been on. It is, there's a bit of a brotherhood amongst you all. You know,
not even a bit.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable.
It is a brotherhood.
And, you know, the support, you know, from one, you know, artist to another and one gig to another and resources and support and best practices and all that stuff. It's an amazing community for sure. It's unique. You know?
It's different though. I think when you talk about the group of us that you know, the same age that came up together, yourself and Dale, you know, we came up a much different way than a lot of production managers come up these days. You know, we came up with the, you know, fuck. I mean, we drove the truck. You know, we remember the days when there was no stagehands and no catering and just, you know, get the job done. And I think there's a lot to that. You know, I think it built a lot of the character that I think we have.
But I think that people like you and I made that happen. It can't happen like this anymore. And you made shit happen.
Yeah.
I need this. And I know it sounds very crappy, but Kenzie and I grew up in the worst part of the whole thing, but made it better.
I agree. I have to say, I agree with that. You know, but we learned from the generation that was before us. And I've talked about this with other production managers. You know, Jake came before us and Bill Leabody was there before us. And, you know, and you can even go further back to Joe Baptiste and Michael A. Hearn and all those guys, you know, but each generation has left their mark. And I think the new generation of production managers are leaving their mark as well. I do in some respect. I mean, I know a lot of production managers that you know have CAD skills and go about things in a much different way. You know, if I tried to open a DWG on my computer, it would cough and shut down.
I can do it.
You say these things.
Kenzie's right. There's a different way of doing shit. But by the way, you and I work for X that we can find someone else to do it for us.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Agreed. Why do I need to know that? Right. Yeah. Why do I need to know that we're busy? We got other stuff going on. We're running big shows. Let someone else deal with that. And it comes to you and you go, it's okay.
Yeah.
That's
I know you know, Matt, just so you're aware, you know, Springo's been Paul McCartney's production manager for, is it 20 years, over 20 years? How long's it been now? 22 years. You know, and as you know, I did, you know, I was Roger's production manager for 18 years. So we both kind of had a parallel career working for a huge legacy artist who tends to work a lot, but not too much, you know, just to kind of enough, you know, where we've also had the luxury of, you know, doing other things in between, you know, little things that kind of make us happy and little things that, you know, we learn more on and meet new people and see other ways of doing things. So it's we kind of had a parallel kind of career.
We have.
I remember, speaking of parallel career, I remember when you were working for Alicia Keys and I was working and I was working for Mary J. Blige at the time, and that, you know, put us in the same lane for a while too.
Same vein.
Let me interject here real quick, based off of earlier part of the conversation, just to kind of set this up, because you guys are talking about coming from a different angle or, you know, a different genre or a generation of production managers. You know, being Chris's little brother, you know, it's like, I remember he started in the industry doing lighting and pyro and backline and, you know, basically all the other different hats with smaller acts, like when he was with Joan Jett and so on and so forth. And so back in that era, we're talking like 30 plus, you know, 40 years ago kind of thing. I'm kind of curious, you know, Springo, it's like, where did that manifest for you? What was the beginning of all of that? And what were like the first roles that you played? Because one of the things I wanted to point out was, I think that there's such a great level of appreciation for all the other disciplines on a tour because you guys have, you know, walked in those shoes and worn those hats. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes.
So what, how did you get all started in this whole industry? Like, what was your, you know, where were you? What was the first thing?
As you'll get answered. I was in high school and I wanted a new job. And there was a guy in our high school that had jobs and they sent me to a lighting company because as Kanzie and both Kanzies, I knew how to, my mom and dad were electricians, so I knew how to do lights. Capron.
And that's in rural Boston, right?
Yes, right. I could walk from my high school to work, and that's what I did.
Was this like in the 11th grade, 12th grade?
Oh, fuck. Just before graduating.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit before that, but, and they employed me, lighting company. I built an Eagle system. I built a, by the way, Neil Young system and all that crap. But that was Northwest. Do you remember that, Chris?
Northwest Sound. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that was, they had built something to do the Eagles, but it went through my high school.
So was that Parkins with pre-rig truss, or was that even predate pre-rig truss individually?
Oh, wasn't even that. It was cases full of shit. Right?
Steel Parkins and Fresnels and Leicas.
All that. Nothing moved. Nothing did anything sensible.
Pre-hang on steel truss. Yeah, man. Stuff was heavy then.
But I was 17.
Wow. Did you ever climb and you ever shimmy along a truss and focus lights?
Oh yeah, danger.
Stick your hand in the back of a park head and spin the bulb.
I did everything wrong. it's not a mystery to us. It's not a mystery.
Yeah.
It happened. It was cool. That was a high school thing. Went to college, and this is what I think you want, Matt. I went to college at Long Beach State for a technical theater degree, and I got it.
So wow, you went cross country. That must have been different for you.
Had to get out.
How did that feel? Going, you know, a Boston guy going over to rural Los Angeles. What was the?
I knew some people, so it wasn't so bad. But I had to go to school by myself, and all. That's not so bad. Go to school by yourself, no big deal. But I knew some people out there. So when I got out of school, by the way, never, this is actually, you can edit this out, I don't care. I never got my diploma. My mother got it. Right? I sent it to her. Right?
Oh, how funny. How funny.
And she goes, what do you want me to do with this? Just keep it, Mom. Right.
Do you remember when you were in college what your aspirations were?
I do.
Yeah. But what did you, what was the vision?
That's a great, I went to school to pay for school. So I was with Dale and we did the Sha-na-na crap. So I went in between sessions. So, you know, I missed the third quarter or the first quarter so I could go to work to pay for school.
So this is based out of LA. You kind of intersect, you put yourself back in the industry then in the LA area.
I think so, but it was so like,
was that show lights or was that pre-show lights?
No, that was pre-show lights because Dale and I were working for Sha-na-na for a long time. And that kind of paid for my school.
Ah, so what you said by going to school to pay for school, you went to school with Dale working for Sha-na-na.
Yep.
And that paid for school. And Dale, Matt, as he's referring to, is Opie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Opie told us the story of Sha-na-na.
Him and I were just crashing. I had this studio flat, and the two of us would just sit down out there and, right? That was it. We fell asleep on the floor and we went down to Venice Beach. It was a Venice Beach thing.
Yeah.
It's a really long story and you don't want to.
Yeah. But yeah, but just to finish up with Sha-na-na, I mean, it was kind of similar to what I did at that age. When you worked for Sha-na-na, you did everything, right? You just didn't do lights, you just didn't do backline. You loaded the truck, you unloaded the truck. It was kind of it was probably six people in the entire crew, and you guys just did everything. So that's fair to say. Four people. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
But that breeds success, breeds success.
So. Yep. Agreed. Agreed.
So I think that's, sadly, that's a hard way to start, but I bet anybody right now won't start that way. So.
They don't. It's a different world, you know, and I've said it before on this podcast, you know, kids go and work in the shop. You know, I mean, there's, you know, a lot of the upstaging staff are kids who grew up in Sycamore or around the shop, and they go to the shop, they tech in the shop, and before you know it, they're on the road with Paul McCartney or Coldplay. You know, it's we see it all the time. It's a different way.
I must admit that you trip over a whole lot more than I do with Coldplay. That's a much bigger deal than what I got going.
Well, I mean, but you know, both of us work for artists that, you know, they're not a constant. You know, they're going, they don't just go and stay going, you know, they stop a lot. And when they stop a lot, tend to have a turnover of crew.
A transition of people. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm seeing lots of young people fresh out of the shop, and, you know, I welcome it. And so do my department heads and my stage managers.
I agree with that too.
We nurture them, you know.
Fresh meat. Right? And then teach them how to do this.
Yeah.
Because they think they know what they're doing when they come out, but they don't.
Right? Well, you're most of it. You're teaching them how to be a touring individual. You're teaching them how to be prompt for lobby call.
Responsible people.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Responsible people.
I don't look for too much past that.
Yeah. Right? You know, I don't ever expect anybody to work as hard as we had to when we were that age.
I
mean, it's
just, I don't
it's
want them to do it.
It's a different world, you know?
Just because we did it doesn't mean anybody else has to do it.
Okay. So the next transition is show lights for you, right? So you eventually meet Eric Pierce and you're in LA and you go to work for show lights. And so did Opie, right?
Yes.
And then you're out on tour as a lighting tech.
We lived together.
Right on. You still kind of live together, actually.
We do.
What does he
live? Can't avoid each other. No matter what happens. But that was the funnest days.
I can imagine.
I look back at that, goes fun. Yeah, big shows. Big. But my thing now is a big show means nothing. Look at Kenzie. He runs a fucking giant show.
It's big.
Big deal. Right. Right.
But you know, let's talk about those days. You know, the 80.
That's what they expect out of
us. They do. They do. But in the 80s, did you tour any of those? I mean, I remember, didn't Van Halen have 1,000 Parkans or something stupid like that?
Sadly, I missed that.
But I'm just using that as an example.
David Lee Roth right after that, which had the same Van Halen thing. Let's go there.
That's a lot of Parkans those days, you know.
It's a fucking sky full of lights for no reason, right?
You know, it's like 1,200 amps, three-phase.
It was spectacle. It wasn't... It put up a big fucking show.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I never did in those days, I did it once and it scared the shit out of me. Climbing a truss ladder from the ground up to height, which you work in those days. You're up and down. You're climbing. Yeah. You're climbing. You're walking on trusses.
Or you're falling.
Or you're falling. Yeah. And you guys did not have fall protection at all, did you?
Hell no.
You just climbed. I remember seeing guys jump onto cable picks and climb down the cable pick. You know, remember those days? That's,
yes.
I've seen guys climb up a cable pick like it's a rope in gym.
Yeah. I did that in the 90s when I was doing the Power Rangers thing. We're climbing. There was no safety up and down.
Oh, come on.
Picks.
Nuts.
That was strong.
Hey, the world is different, guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, those days working for show lights, you and Dale both, I'm a true believer on being a lighting guy. You're one of the first in, one of the last out. That's great stage manager training.
Indeed. Because why am I up this early? Right. And why am I going to bed this late? Right. That's how it worked. And that's how we got to where we are now.
It was exciting days, man. We had our whole life ahead of us. You know, every level I worked at, I thought I'd made it. And when I kind of bumped up another level, I thought to myself, wow, I didn't even know this level was here. Holy shit, this is awesome. You know, it's just, it's been a wonderful career, I have to say.
Are you calling it? No.
No, not yet. Okay. No, this is no official announcement.
Okay.
Still has a wonderful career.
Well, you know, it's not much unlike you, you know, saying you were going to retire so you can coach the Red Sox.
But I can't buy the Red Sox. So it's the only way you can coach the Red Sox is to buy them.
Right? That's true. Okay. You know, I've heard the story before, but, you know, tell the listeners, you know, tell me how you transitioned into stage management.
It's all by default. And you know that, Chris, it's
very
all
much so.
By default. Oh, wait. Yeah, you've been there for 2 years and you know how to run this. You're the stage manager.
Yeah. You and show up the truck when it shows up. You're the last one there when the door closes. It's just by default because that's how
it's all default. We made our way. Because we were there.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah. I say that to young people all the time when they ask me. I said, you know what? Just be the first one at the truck and be the last one to leave. You know, you want to prove yourself to people. That's a good way to start.
Yeah. Sadly, it hasn't changed. Right. But Chris and I were the first guy in, the last guy out. And that's why we can, first of all, have this conversation, right? Because you want to talk to people who allegedly are important, but we know what we're doing, but I don't know how to tell someone else what we do.
Yeah.
It's very difficult now because I don't think the touring biz is what it was. But you know, Chris does fucking huge shows, right? And I have a popular guy, right? it's But how could you introduce anybody else into this crap and go ahead, talk to him?
Yeah, it's when people ask me what I do, you know, a production manager, and I'm like, what does that mean? And you know, I've narrowed it down to what I'll say is, as someone who has no idea about the music industry, I'll say, well, I operate the band's business on the road. That's kind of the only way I can word it to have it make sense to a layperson.
And for your brothers, my history doesn't mean anything. It's what we're doing right now. And my history is with your brother, right? Sadly, all the way down the line, we made poor decisions. And now we're doing big rock shows, right? And we could have gone home, right?
Hey, a poor decision's better than no decision.
No, I think we've made great decisions.
I agree.
Or those decisions were made for us, right?
It's there's still a passion to it, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, for me, and Matt knows this, it all started with the love of music. Did the love of music play a part for you at all?
Zero.
Really?
Listen, Matt, I couldn't fucking care less. You know what it was? And Kenzie won't say this. It's the thrill of putting it up.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. I don't care who the fuck you are and what you... I did Madonna. Piece of shit, right? It was putting it up. I don't care if it goes out. You can put that up, Matt. I don't care. I did that because I wanted to build something big.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Chris is the same way. Build something big. Doesn't mean that it means anything, but at the end of the day, it might.
Yeah. Right? No matter what tour you're on, you everything shows up in trucks. You unload the trucks, you rig them, you fly them, you build the stage, and it's all the same no matter what show you're on. And then eventually an artist comes in that afternoon and plays a certain type of music, you know. But you know, our passion for watching it go up and making it work, and even the whole aspect of being introduced to new technologies, you know, all of that.
Yes.
It's just super exciting.
I take everything in, but when that fucking thing goes up, it's the coolest thing that ever happened to the world.
Yeah.
After the first show, maybe the second show.
And then there's the whole other thrill of the loadout. I mean, the loadout has its own set of thrills.
It's a whole scheme. We're subjugated from the time you load in to the time you load out.
Mm.
And to me, it doesn't matter who I'm talking to. Any of these acts that we work for, we're so lucky that we tripped over ourselves and got these cool acts.
Mm.
But when they walk in, I don't give a fuck. Does it work? Yep, go.
but also, what is your appreciation lie with the managers that you work for? I really think that is probably more important than the artist I work for. That relationship with the manager, their level of trust, you know, how they treat you.
I don't have that problem.
Yeah, I'm just saying that's. I do appreciate that. I know you and Barry Marshall are very close. I think that's.
We don't have. So we're not excluding Matt, that I, you and I at this point in our careers, we walk in. What do you want? Right. That's kind of where we're at. You know, when I talk to Paul, do you think he wants to talk to me about something? Fuck no. Right. He wants me to tell him. And then they make their decisions. Like, fuck Roger. Right?
Yeah.
Waters, tough game. Yeah. Tough game.
He's got his thumb in everything though. His hands, his fingerprints are all over every aspect of his show.
this cannot be put on this. McCartney's got a thing because he's from Liverpool and all, and Everton is the other team. He can't pick a team because they'll think the Beatles were this, right?
So right. But let's get back to your pedigree. You know, I mean, if we're, you know, listeners are really interested in and in how things came about, you know, and I know Al Santos was an important person in your life.
Indeed.
You know, with Bob Dylan, was that the first time you stage managed?
Yes.
And how long?
I turned into Tom.
I turned into Tom Petty.
Yep.
Which turned into another thing, which turned into another thing, which led to your opportunity as a production manager. Def Leppard.
I've had a good run.
So. But you know, Def Leppard, those were the, you know, they were the biggest band in the world for probably 5 or 6 years.
It was incredibly in the round, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, Pyromania into Hysteria. I mean, they were freaking huge.
Big time. You know, these things happen, guys, right? You're in the right place at the right time. But those guys were good. I liked those Def Leppard guys. I like them.
Yeah, that was good a coming men, of age.
They gave a shit. And
yeah, they have good reputations as people. That was the coming of age of a lot of people, that Def Leppard period. It was you, there was Charlie Hernandez, there was Faye McMahon.
Yep.
Robert Scoville, a lot of people really began to carve their careers in that era with Def Leppard. That was a great era.
It was huge. And we were big. I mean, big. And
it just kept going.
Just kept going. But I had to leave because they didn't know anything. What was that? When the grunge thing came in.
All right.
That killed him.
1990, 91, yeah.
It killed him. So I went to work for Seal.
Oh, right. As a stage manager?
Production manager.
Oh, you were a production for Seal. So was that 90s?
Oh.
Must have been 90s,
look at
yeah.
The poster in my... It was early night. No. Early 90s, maybe 92, 93. And then I had to go back. I didn't have to. I wanted to go back to Def Leppard. They've always been close to my heart. So,
right.
I did the Seal thing.
Steve Perry, solo from Journey.
It was the greatest fucking thing I've done.
Really?
He stood in front of me. Springo, what do you want for breakfast? I go, nothing, Steve. I go, why are you fucking up? Right. He was one of the greatest cats that we ever could work with.
Oh, man.
And there's a cool story. This is Matt, you gonna put this out?
Yeah.
So he goes, the manager, the guy from Prince, can't remember now. He goes, you can't talk to him like you are now. I go, why? Told him to go to fucking bed and don't fucking come in. You can't tell him that. All right. I already did. Right. And so Steve comes up and goes, what's wrong, Spring? I want to go. You don't need to wake up in the morning and tell us what to do. Right. He went, oh, okay. Conversation over. Right. Steve, come on in. I mean, he's a kind of an analytical guy. At 6 a.m., he's got to be up. I still have a shirt in my closet that Gay goes, you got to get rid of it. Nope. That's from fucking Steve Perry. Right. It'll never go anywhere. And Steve I was scolded, as I said, I was scolded by the manager, but you can't tell Steve to fuck off, right? I went, yeah, I can. Right?
I just did.
But that was really cool. Steve Perry, psychotic, right?
Really? But
yeah, he was Steve, right? There was a two parts of your life that you ever had, and one was Steve Perry and one was reality, right? And we walked him into it. He was really good after we got him, as you do, you know, on your shows. You get these guys to think like you. It takes a long time, but they have to think like you. Wow, Springo says we got to be there at 5, right? It's in their heads. Or Kanzi says you got to be there at 4. You got to be there, and that's kind of why, Matt, why we're so fucking good at what we do. Is to get them guys or those guys or women to think like we do, because they want to think like they do. And I've done that sadly with Paul, is you need to be here at 4 or 5. And they listen to us.
Yeah.
We're good. We're fucking good.
Yeah. Right? Or some days you're running behind and you need to make that phone call, guys. Stay at the hotel a little longer, or drag your feet. Come here a little later. We're working through an issue, and don't want them standing around on stage waiting.
We're fucking good. And then when they come in, they go, "Oh, we're ready." And this will come up again. Is McCarty goes, "Do I have to hurry up?" And I go, "Yes." Come on.
Doors are opening.
And he gets it.
Yeah.
The old time guys gets it. And I guess I haven't worked for a new time guy. So I don't know. I don't know how it works, but I'm convinced that Kenzie and I know how to run a show. And so you should come and listen to us, because we know how to run it. Right? May this take a couple of weeks, right? But after that, they're in.
Does McCarty sound check every day?
Yes.
I remember on Desert Trip, he came in at like 10 o'clock in the morning, or was it even earlier than that, to get his sound check in? I was pretty impressed.
He's that whole sound checking thing. It's insatiable.
Yeah.
And then he'll work 4 weeks before that. So when he walks in, he's ready to go.
Yeah. And
that's what differences us from what we do with the big time guys. Right? Roger walks in, bing. Coldplay walks in, bing. Right?
Yeah. Roger's another big sound checker every day. Every day. Doesn't miss one.
I think it's part of their waking up and taking a shit, right? It's that whole analogy of this is how this works. And I went, okay. Who are we to argue? We work for some of the biggest acts on the planet. Do you want to tell them how to do this? No. Right?
No. They've earned it.
You're right. They've earned to be a good guy to be an asshole, right?
Hey, I remember. Did you do that George Michael tour with the waterfall LED wall that came down behind it? That was really.
I did.
That was one of the first times I'd ever seen a screen articulate like that. That was pretty.
That was Patrick Woodruff.
Yeah.
And I think he put that, and that was one of the greatest things I ever did.
Awesome. Awesome. I really like that show. I'm a big fan of his.
George.
Yeah, he good was, guy.
Scott Chase and I had a bit. about who he would recognize first. When he went on, we were always standing when he went on. Hi, Scott. I went, yes.
Scott's Matt. Scott Chase is his Springer's longtime stage manager and partner. Yeah. You know, who I had the pleasure of seeing twice in the last month. Scotty Chase, really good to see him.
We're so cool, Matt. The first guy I seen is fucking Kenzie, right? And then Lee Body showed up. And
it was awesome.
A cool little.
He's talking about last weekend in Chicago. I'm checking in. I go up to the front desk. I got my roller bag. I get my key. I head for the elevator. And I see Charlie by himself sitting in the restaurant. Charlie, what's up? Have a seat. And 3.5 hours later, after several bottles of this and that, you know, Springer was there. Gay's there. You know, Robert came down. You know, the Anthony Giordano, Donnie Carone. It was so fun. So fun.
What was going on in Chicago that brought you all there?
Well, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, Robert Carone had his 70th birthday.
Oh, okay.
And you met Robert at my 60th up on the roof. Robert was there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I heard that part. I just didn't put the connection together. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Sounds like a hell of a party.
It was really, really fun.
It was a nice, it wasn't crazy. It was nice.
Mm. Hey, so tell me about the craziness of working for Simon and Garfunkel.
Whoa.
Two guys
who go that far.
Two guys who really don't care for each other. What was it like being in that environment?
That I got a shorter bit of this is I left Metallica because I hated it.
You were Metallica's production manager. I remember that now.
Yes, I hated it. I just didn't
when
dig
was
it.
That?
2003.
Okay.
And I couldn't stand them. They were dicks. And I didn't like, I'll say it, I didn't like any of the backline guys. They were pricks.
Yeah, I've been around the Metallica camp a lot in my career. They definitely have their own way of doing things. It's almost militaristic, you know. I've been to festivals when they come in and just put safety tape around everything and claim all the space. It's crazy.
But you and I are militaristic, but we don't punch people.
Yeah.
I watched somebody punch somebody, like fist, and I went, I'm out of here. And I took Scott, Gino, a whole bunch of them from Metallica and went to Simon and Garfunkel. Paul Simon is one of the greatest guys that ever walked the world.
And songwriter. Great. Mm-hmm. One of the great songwriters, you know.
And Garfunkel is a little funky. He wasn't as cool as Paul, but you had to put up with him. And he wasn't a problem. It was different.
Yeah.
And who was the opening act? Sorry, guys. The Everlys.
Really?
Wow.
What? The Everly Brothers opened up for Simon and Garfunkel?
Opening act. And so Scott and I had to go wrangle those guys. They didn't like each other.
The Everlys or Simon and Garfunkel? Well, both. Both are.
Everlys. They married twins.
Oh, gosh.
Yep.
Wow.
Boy, that's a whole other conversation of possibilities.
No, it's not even. But they were good. They were all good people. And the Everlys kind of got along. So Scott and I used to go, where is he? Where's Don? Right. And the stories that would come out of that, we don't have enough time. But for Art and Paul was the guy.
Yeah.
And you talk to him, you could talk to him, but Art, there's that other Art. He was more of theatrical, right? Whereas Paul Simon would sit there and, you know, play a guitar for fucking 5 hours to get one tune, right? That's not my problem, right? But Simon was a cool guy. Art was a different guy.
Right.
That led into...
Go ahead.
I think that led into McCartney. No, Madonna. No, McCartney.
One of the M's.
One of the M's, yeah.
We had all these M's. Scott Chase says, when are we going to get a different alphabet? Right?
Madonna's a tough one, man. There's a lot of, you have to put a huge effort in for that one. You know,
I was disappointed in her. I think she, in my 2001, she made all the guys work. So everybody had money. So I didn't, but I was just disappointed in how she didn't appreciate what was going on. Right.
Yeah,
it was you all can't, about dancers and shit, but
yeah, can't always expect a pat on the back, you know. I mean,
I
always
say,
I just want my paycheck to be on time. That's my thank you.
I was thinking a little less than you was. I simply recognize us, and she couldn't put that up, so that's why I left. Went to George. Another cool George story. Am I boring you?
No. You're anything but boring, Springo. And I think most people would agree on that.
We're sitting around with George, and we used to have a pool of when would George go on. So it started about, you know, 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes. Then it turned into like seconds, right? All the crew would be in, right? And then George found out. And George goes, I want to be in. And George, you can't be in. Right? He goes, yeah, I can. I go, no, you can't. Right? If he was 15 minutes late or 10 minutes late, you get the money and all. It was every fucking night. And he finally figured it out. And he told us, fuck you. So we had to get rid of that pool, right?
Have to go back to the boring old football pool.
George, that's when he would walk up and go, who won? Right? Fuck. Right?
Hey, so going back, we talked about Al Santos briefly. Who were some of the other people that you feel like you took a lead from or were helped by or inspired by? Or who were some of the people that you took a lead from?
Mostly Al. I got Tom Petty because of him. And then after I did Tom, the Madonna guys called me. No. Yeah, Madonna guys called me.
So yeah.
That Everybody came had... from Chris Lamb.
I got to meet Chris Lamb before. He's been retired for quite a while, but I did get to meet
him. He disappeared. We were talking about him. He's like disappeared. But he's old enough. He should be gone, right?
I remember seeing him for the first time. He had a long duster jacket and a cowboy hat. I thought he looked so cool.
Here comes John Wayne over there. Right?
How funny. How funny.
That's how it kind of came. What did you do? Where was your start?
Well, my start was, you know, I worked locally in Connecticut as a local lighting guy, worked in the club, house lighting guy in a club. And then when you're a house lighting guy, you meet a lot of people.
Yes.
Yeah. And then some, you know, some bands you'd see two and three times a year. It was the Agora Ballroom in Hartford. And, you know, the Ramones played there two or three times a year, you know, band, you know, New York local regional bands. And Joan Jett and the Blackhearts was one of the bands that frequently played there. So I got to know them. And Brian Hartley was their LD. And
Brian Hartley.
Holy Brian shit. Hartley. And Brian Hartley called me one day and said, "Hey, I can't do part of a leg. I've got a prior commitment. Can you, it was either start or finish a Joan Jett leg." And I went out there and I was Joan Jett's LD for a short period of time. And again, that ethos I was telling you about earlier, first at the truck, last one at the truck, which I was burned into me from, you know, being a local guy, kind of led to Elliot Saltzman, the tour manager.
Elliot Saltzman, holy
fuck. He came to me and said, "Chris, you're the production manager now." And my response was, "What is that? And do I have to?" So I became a production manager in the late 80s for Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. And, you know, and I went in and out of it. I stage managed for a while some bigger bands, but, you know, I went back and forth. But, you know, that was kind of it in a nutshell.
I'm thinking my first really cool production manager job was Tom. I'm thinking that was 90. 91.
Wow.
That's heyday, man.
Right.
Al got me in. That's what I say. Al's been my hero for years. Yeah. He's always done something right for me. And I call him. You have a mentor in your life. Sadly, it's Al Santos.
does he still do Dylan these days?
Of course.
Wow.
He will not do anything else.
That is awesome. That is awesome.
And Dylan's doing something with Willie this summer. I haven't talked to Al. He dinged me back because I told him, I said, "Your name come up. And if you hear it in your dream, it was me." Right.
So. Yeah. Did you, I think I've heard, we may have talked to this before, but you knew Jerry Stickles, didn't you?
Of course.
Yeah. He's one of the originals. I mean, he was a de facto production manager when there was no such thing as a production manager. You know, he goes back to the
invention of this industry. South America. He broke South America. He made South America happen. And I liked him. He's a good man.
Man. And Rick O'Brien is his
Rick right O'Brien hand. And I sitting on the fucking tarmac. And when I go, "You got to get Bob shit off this fucking tarmac." It was boiling in the tarmac for Rio. What's it called?
Rio de Janeiro.
The Hollywood goes to whatever.
Oh, Rockin' Rio?
Wasn't Rockin' Rio. There's another one.
Oh, okay.
That was Hollywood goes to Rock or something like that.
Okay.
And that shit sitting out on the fucking tarmac.
Doesn't get any hotter than out of the tarmac.
I brought O'Brien out there with me. What the fuck? We only knew each other a week. Right? That was it. But he was, he sadly, I have an award because of his name.
So. Yep. Mark is the owner, or he was, I don't know, presented the Parnelli Lifetime Achievement Award. And Rick O'Brien's nickname was Parnelli.
Yep.
So that's, and you're well deserved.
Yeah.
For your lifetime achievement.
It's your turn.
You
sometimes
know,
you don't want those things because
I know. I
don't. Life over.
Yeah. I just never frequented. I'm not in that circle of people, you know.
Well, get yourself in that quiet little circle of guys. Hey. We don't make any noise. You're talking to me, right? It's a good place to be. Cover your ass and show up. It was so cool. Matt, the fucking first guy I saw when I walked in besides Charlie was him, right?
So, I like it. And he had a genuine look of happiness and surprise. I was happy to see that. Yeah. It was good.
Fucking Kenzie. And so... my missus goes, "Oh, that's Kenzie?" I go, "Yep." Because the name runs around the house. The names run all around the house. And she goes, "Oh, that's Kenzie." Okay.
Well, you know, we're happy to know each other as production managers because, you know, when do we see each other? I ran into you at the 12-12-12 in Madison Square Garden. I think I remember running into you at a Grammys in the Staples Center once. I mean, production managers or Desert Trip Festival atmosphere, that's when we see each other, you know?
But more importantly, we understand each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a big deal for me. Is Matt. It all us production managers, bad or good, we understand each other. Do you want to fuck with Kenzie? No. Do you want to fuck with right? So we figure out a way to make this all work. So
the brotherhood.
Yeah.
It is.
Thankfully. It is. There's little fucking people don't like each other anymore in this business, but we do.
Oh.
But it's interesting. There's still different pockets of industry. It's really interesting how, like, you know, different genres of music have their own, you know, universes, right? It's like the country versus the rap versus like different genres and stuff. It's I mean, at least that's how I look at it. It'd be interesting to kind of see a little bit more crossover, you know, as far as like this podcast kind of thing and seeing how the other side works. Cause again, being kind of someone who's listening and watching, listening, talking to you guys, you know, it's a really, really interesting vibe. It's a really interesting, I mean, like you said, the brotherhood and, but I'm just kind of, you know, I guess I'm just bringing this up from the curiosity of like, you know, running across people you don't know the industry that have been in it just as long, but just from a different, you know, genre of music kind of thing. So
well, we don't care. No, in the nicest way. It's a, what do you got? Bring it. We're smart enough to listen to you. Then tell you to fuck off. No. Right. I listen to everything.
Yeah.
My day is spent listening. Right.
Yeah.
And so is, I'm sure, Kenzie's. It's just listening to what these fuckers have to say.
Yeah.
And then we're smarter than them, sadly. And they'll be smarter than us soon. Right. Try to figure something out.
Yeah.
This isn't hard. Kenzie said that to me one time. It's got to be a couple of years ago. You know, this isn't the hardest thing. It's just big. That's all it is.
Yeah, it's more people.
Yeah.
It's just more people.
Smartest, one of the smartest guys I know.
Oh, that's very kind of you. So you're on break from Paul right now. Paul's on a, he's not working this year, is he?
Paul McCartney doesn't want to work.
Not this year.
He's not. Can't put this on, Matt. Q4.
Q4.
Yep.
Okay, Matt. So you're going back to work for Neil Young this year, aren't you?
I'm covering my ass because Drmalski helped me out big time last year.
Yeah, Steve Drmalski was the production manager for Neil Young. Before Springo. Steve, good guy, Steve.
He's still the production manager. I'm the substitute. Yeah. I'm good at that.
He's a really super guy, Steve.
He's one of the greatest human beings that ever walked the planet.
I agree.
He's got a cool way of thinking, and he knows how Neil works. So I'm sitting on him right now. But he handed me the baton, so I'm going.
Nice. That's not a, you know, that's not going to suck listening to Neil Young every night. But yeah, but then again, I'm a music.
I don't listen to music. Matt said earlier, do you listen to music? I go, no. Right? I don't have any of
those really
streaming shit. I got nothing.
Well, you got pulled. You know, you got offered a job, whereas Chris, you know, actively seeked out working in the industry. So it's hey, however you get there, right?
No, well, I think both of us fell into it.
Absolutely.
I would not be here. I had a conversation with my mom and dad. I said, this is what I'm going to do. And I was in between school And I said, I'm still going to finish my fucking education. I got my degree. And I said, but in the meantime, I'm going to be a rock guy. And of course, you guys know that our moms and dads thought we were like carnies, right? Yeah. And I went, well, this is what's
how many times did one of your parents ask you, what is it time to get a real job? When are you going to get a real job?
I think constantly.
Yeah. Right. Didn't take it seriously.
No, didn't
take it seriously.
You're right, Chris. It's back then. How old are you?
62.
65. So we're in the right plane of parents being disappointed in us.
Oh, that's funny. But you know, we talked about it earlier, but you know, I can remember when I was in my early days, if I made a couple $100 a week, I was psyched, you know, and that was enough for me in 1980, 1981. And then I remember Jones Jet and the Black Card, so I made $350 a week.
Holy shit.
And I thought that was, oh fuck, am I doing good? This is so good. You know, and I made it to $500 a week before I finished with Joan. But, and you know, it was enough. It was enough. Your bills got paid. You saved a little bit, you know. I mean, it was, you know, what did you do with your money back then anyway? I mean, I was on the road constantly, you know, constantly between the age of 18 to almost 40. I was just out saying yes to everything.
Yes.
You don't have time to spend the money.
The word no doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Now it does.
it certainly does now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certain criteria you look at, you know. I mean, there's, you know, for me, well, there's the music, not so much for you, but you know, the music means something to me. The level of respect from management, which I brought up a little earlier, the level of respect from management is super important. You know, having the ability to have your team and your people around you, your support system, super important, you know.
Very important.
And sometimes you get all three. And then if you get the money you want, or maybe a little bit more, then what is there to complain about?
And then what Springo brought up earlier was the fact that you're just, you know, building something, you know, just creating a monster. You know, it's a moving city. You know, those time lapse and like you know, of us, you know, stages coming in and everything going up to the sky and then coming back down at the end of the day and stuff. And
yeah,
I mean, that's a huge reward too, being part of something massive like that and watching all these well orchestrated ants get their job done and stuff like that. That's what gets me when I think about it. It's like just building something and having something to show for and having all those people, you know, appreciate the show. But sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, that's valid.
I'll tell you what. Once those guys, whoever they are, put their foot on the stage, it's their problem, not mine. Right?
You got them that
if
far.
They piss people off or people don't dig it, it's not Kanzi or my fault.
Well, until that cue goes wrong.
Like I said, once they put their foot on the stage, right? They got to carry that show. I can't. Right? I don't play a fucking radio, right? It's your turn. And I think that's something that is reasonably important, is that the music is cool, but I don't need to dig it. It's the whole thing about giving those assholes or women, right, that stage play. It's your turn. It's not mine.
Yeah. Do you listen to, I mean, do you have a headset on during the show? Are you listening to a show caller, or are you listening to any kind of cueing or for on Paul's show?
No.
Yeah. You know, neither do I. I'd be honest with you. I don't either. I know some production managers do.
Why do I need to know? You and I have hired the right people to be in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
They move a lift up, they move a lift down. All I need to know is it doesn't work, right? And when it doesn't work, it's too late, right?
Well, you know, when it doesn't work, well, one thing I do with my department heads, I said, guys, if something goes wrong, I'm the first one you tell. Doesn't matter how small or simple, we need to know. You know, my biggest
talkie, spring out, you got to come out here.
Yeah.
Kenzie, you got to come out here. Okay. Yeah.
But, you know, our biggest nightmare is an artist walking off stage and looking up to you and going, what happened there? And if I don't know, that is when my stomach drops and I go, oh fuck, you know, I gotta know,
Paul, Paul McCartney will talk to me after. He goes, I know you couldn't fix it then. What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
That's a pro.
Exactly. Love that.
He looks at me and goes, I go, I know what's the problem. And in their heads, they have already figured it out.
Yeah.
And if they're coming off that deck being angry, that means the portion of that show after that sucked.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They go, okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of artists, you know, they know you're working hard. They know you're trying. They know there's no complacency or any kind of champion of mediocrity that has set into the, they know, you know, so if something does go wrong, they get it. And, you know, because there's a level of trust there. But if the same thing keeps fucking up, then.
And we don't have a job anymore.
Exactly. You know,
shit happens. And
shit
they
happens.
Know that for the first call. Second call, they might go, Third call, you're out. But you know, it's a kind of a cool thing to know that we're all associated with fucking giant acts. And that has a lot to say for us, that we're all in the same game. We all talk to each other. This is a really cool, sadly, clique of guys. And there's some women in there too, right? There's plenty of, I had to beat up what's her name? Fuck. Billie Eilish's gal. I need some help.
Nicole Massey.
Nicole Massey. I need some help because of diet and shit for Neil, right? And she put Diane and I on the right road. And it's, if they didn't know who we are, we wouldn't know who they are. So, and that's the way I think about how we've become this big, not because of our own, because of the other people around us. And I'm very appreciative of that. And so is Kenzie. You're only as good as the people around you.
That is so true. And Matt, earlier you were talking about different types of shows, and you know, it's we were talking earlier, you did a Madonna thing. You also did the Spice Girls.
And that's, yeah.
I think that's a whole different, because I did a Janet Jackson tour, and that's the only one I've done of that genre where props on, props off, dancers on, dancers off, you know, that kind of thing. That's almost more Broadway than it is rock and roll. You know,
one of the funnest things I ever did. Totally out of control. Money meant nothing, right? It was fun. And we did 17 or 20 nights at the O2.
Wow.
And I never left. Put it in once, put it out once. That was it.
Wow.
And it was, but they were cool people, right? And the girls, I don't really give a fuck about them. Talk to them every once in a while. Hey, how you doing? Right? You meet them under the deck, right? because each one of them was a superstar in and of their own. But
yeah,
fucking fun. We brought everybody. Oh, why do you need the people to run the Tosas? Okay. Do you think that those girls want to be in a toaster with somebody they don't know who's going to push them up? Right? It was so, they were one of the funnest things I've ever done. Now, was it hard? Fuck yeah. But we did it, and it was good, and they were good people. Then we went to George. Cool. Sadly, he forgot to hang around, but it was one of the greatest things, as Kenji said, with that whole video
waterfall.
Wall.
Yeah.
Oh man,
so cool! First time I'd ever seen anything like. I mean, it's pretty commonplace these days, but when you do it for the first time, you always remember the person who did it first.
It was so cool. It looked really good. And he's a cool guy, but what he was.
Did you watch that documentary? I think, I don't know who did it. One of the networks did a documentary on him. And
on George.
And after he passed, you're finding out all this philanthropic stuff he did. He was giving the money away to here, giving money to where, taking care of people. And he's like, I don't want anybody to know. It's nobody else's business but mine. You know. But after he passed, it all came out. He was an incredible human being, very generous.
Scott Chase and I, Matt, we're sitting around in Milan, that bullshit arena there where you got to go down to go up.
Villa Forum.
Yep. So he leaves. George leaves, and he's flying home. All right, great. See ya. He gets home. Gets his car and drives through like a pharmacy's front door because he's fucked up. And we're going, this is the coolest thing that's happened. We haven't finished loading out and George is already in jail. People are going, you can't say that, Matt. But Scott and I are sitting around. We're sitting at the bottom of the ramp, going up the Fila Forum. And they go, oh, there's a problem. I go, what's the problem? George just had a problem. I go, well, big deal. Oh, no, it's a really big problem. We might not have to do 2 days show. I went, it's okay by me, right? So Scott and I were so proud of George, we said it to him. Hey, George, that's kind of cool. You got arrested and bailed before we finished loading out.
Can be a record.
Scott and I and Gino were going, we're, that's so fucking cool.
And it's not because your loadout was slow. It's because he was fast.
He was fast. Exactly. I had to say, people were like laughing at us, go, don't you think this is bad? I went, no, it's actually kind of cool.
Oh, funny.
The rock star gets on the plane, gets off the plane, drives into the front of the pharmacy with a Land Rover or whatever he was running there, and we hadn't even finished loading out. How cool is that?
That's legendary, actually. Hey, so in our world, in our industry, you know, nicknames are given. So in your case, where did Springo come from? Who gave that to you?
So, sadly, my Shanana days with Dale. That's how we got Opie. Was one of the guys from the Shanana said, you look like fucking Opie. And I know it was a sax player and name skipping me at the moment, Lenny. And so Lenny called him that. I don't think he was close to 20. He might have been 21. And then
And you made it your responsibility to make sure that everybody in industry for the rest of his career knew him as Opie.
No, we kept that quiet, but
you did.
That's how it's worked out. So it gets worse. So I'm sending those guys, Lenny, he had a thing where he would go get a beer and a shot during the day. And the beer was whatever, and the shot was Jim Beam. And the drummer, forget his name, he goes, "You had a shot and a beer." So they started calling him Beamo. So everybody that hung out with that, Lenny was, he organized all the money and all that thing. So everybody had a O at the end of their name. Beamo. Spring, right? And it stuck, sadly. It stuck.
So you mean to tell me that two legendary production managers in the industry got their nicknames from Shanana? Is that what you're telling
yes.
me?
Yes.
That is pretty good.
If Shanana only knew, right? It stuck.
No, they know. Because we went to Dale and I and Jake and somebody else, one of those award ceremonies, and we ran into one of the guys from Shanana, Bowser. He was giving the award away, and the three of us met him inside at the Kodak or whatever, and it was, so he looks at us and goes, "Springo." He called him Opie because he's kind of Dale now. I don't really give a shit, right? And Jake won the award, which we knew, right? But it was the Sean and I guys all sitting around in the same room. So it was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. But yes, you're right, Matt. They all have the O at the end. And it's all because the saxophone player who paid all the bills and he Beamo. When he started getting fucked up, he was Beamo.
Stories of legend.
How about that?
Legendary. So we were just talking about how old we were. I mean, how do you still loving what you do? He's
no.
Making a face, everybody.
No. If I work with somebody that I like, that people like Kenzie and I can move and make it right, then yes.
Right.
Otherwise, I don't care. We're smart enough, and I speak for all of us, we're smart enough. We know how to do this shit. Don't tell me how to do this.
Mm.
And that becomes a problem after the first week of listening. Then you go, I don't want to be here. You're not going to listen to me. You want, and that's kind of militaristic on my behalf, but I already know it and I don't need it. Chris and I can go home tomorrow. We can vanish.
Right? We will at one point. One moment we'll be there, the next moment we won't.
But oh. I think that's a detriment to the industry. Listen to the old guys.
Agreed.
And I'm not thinking about me making money. I'm thinking more like Chris saying, we make sense. What makes sense? And if it doesn't make sense, I don't want to do it. And my credo in life is, if it ain't fun, I'm done.
Yeah. I've had that for a while. It's got to be enjoyable. When, I mean, what it is, it's already hard. It's the job starts it hard. You know, as long as they're not making it any harder than it has to be, then there's room for happiness, I think.
I was going to bring this up earlier, you know, when you were talking about kind of working with some of the same people that you've been working with. Is there like some level of expectation? If you've got someone that's been vetted in the industry, like a Roger Waters or a Paul McCartney, and you guys have been around forever, it's like there's just a level of expectation and knowledge, but also a level of just kind of letting things go versus like, I got to control. And you know, you going out with a new artist has got to be like, oh God, here we go. Versus like if you go out with someone who's been, you know, the Stones or whatever, it's like, you know, they've been around the block. They know how to listen. They know how to take feedback. I mean, communication, right?
That's Matt, sadly, that's why they hire us. We don't skip a step. We don't try to do anything any different. We want them, they tell us what to do and we make it happen. And that is not a bad thing because, and then if they ask you to do something, you got a good idea. It's there. I don't, it sad again, sadly, we're in a different thing where the big people want us. And there's one reason why they want us. They want us to run the way it does.
Yeah,
And
I'm worried about it.
if there's a, like, hey, Kenzie, how many fucking backline guys would you kill tomorrow? Right?
Well, I'm not probably not many, not many. I'm not saying
Not many, but
there's probably a
a
couple out there, but hey, I was a backline guy at one time.
Oh, then you need to be killed.
I need to be killed. Yeah, I graduated from it, but you know, hey, they chose that job. They get to come in late. They get to leave first. You know, they have the ear of the band, so they definitely
That's
have
the problem,
they
me.
have a little bit of self-worth that they have.
I don't
You know,
even care
because of
anymore,
that.
Chris. You want your guitar guy to tell me what to do? Go ahead, tell me. Right? I'm kind of over it, but people like you and I, and Matt for that matter, we make those people look good. And that's why we're paid. We make it look good. And there's so much fucking dribble after we open that. But we bring enough people to, well, frankly, for Kenzie and I to make us look good, right? Because there's so much shit that goes on that he and I can't control. We're gonna do X. We showed up in California, we showed up in Arizona, but the band, I saw this. Did you see U2 at the Sphere?
I did. I saw it
Oh yeah,
probably
you told me you did.
the weekend before you did. Yeah.
They don't need anybody else but Dallas, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
At the end of the day, and none of the gear was on the stage. It was a completely different look.
It
And
was. It was. It was all about the video and
yeah.
one Marshall cabinet blocks one video tile. So,
Goes away.
yeah.
But to Matt thing is we're good. That's I don't want to pat myself on the back, but we're good.
Yeah, well, another way I said it earlier in the podcast, another way of saying is we're experienced. You know, that is my biggest achievement is garnering the experience I have, you know, seeing it go wrong, seeing it go right, you know, experience means everything, I think.
I believe we're good.
Yeah.
Experience, that's in your back pocket. We're already good. And no one's, if your name ever came up or my name ever came up somewhere, these guys are good. They don't care. It's you're good.
Yeah, well, get the job done, make everybody look good. Yeah, make everybody look good. You were saying earlier that we make the crew look good, and you know that's true. But I've said this before, and people are probably sick of hearing it. But our job is to make sure they can do their job. That's it.
100%. 100%. I agree with all that. If you don't hire the right people, you're fucking yourself.
Exactly right? That. Well, and you've had how long have you been working with Diane?
23 years.
Yeah, his production coordinator. Yeah, I was with Kim Van Loon, and I have been together over 20 years as well.
Very disappointed on that.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Scotty Chase has been with you for
23 years.
To the point where you don't want to go anywhere else without your people. You know,
well, that's what I've done. Why would I take a gig on where I can't bring my own?
Yeah. Because
we're only as good as our own.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they know how you think. And how you think. And how you work. They know how you think.
Because work as a unit. You know, the individual is not, I'm not going to say irrelevant, but you know, you work as a unit and you're more efficient that way and you communicate better and your life's easier and the job gets done better.
Yeah. Your production coordinator, your stage manager, your head rigger, your head carpenter. If, as long as you have those people with you wherever you go,
you're good.
You're good. They're the snowplow that clears the road for you. You know, they're the.
I agree.
You know, mm-hmm. it's just so important for me. So important.
Yeah. And for me as well. You know, I got on Neil. I'm going to get this guy and that guy. But I have enough grounding where I know, first of all, Neil won't even notice. Who gives a fuck, right? Come on, right? He's not going to go, where's the rigger today, right? It's not going to happen.
I'm excited for you. You know, I mean, I thought Neil Young, A Desert Trip, was the best. You know, there was
that whole burlap thing we had to fucking pull up.
Well, I wasn't paying attention to that. And we're talking about Dylan and the Stones on day one. Paul McCartney had Neil Young open, and then we had the Who open for Roger. And I watched every band on both weekends. And I had a bus there. I just stayed on site. It was awesome. And I really was blown away by Neil Young. Really, really was blown away.
He's very... intrinsic, that might not be the right word, but he wants his hand on everything.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. I'm going to go see him next week.
Those six bands I just mentioned, you know, five of the bands, they played the same set list and played every note the same. And it was just kind of this performance where Neil Young, he jammed things out. He let things feed back for a long time. He just, it was more organic feeling.
And organic.
It was incredible. Really, really, really enjoyed him. So I look forward to it. And you're coming to Jazz Fest, where I live in New Orleans, very soon. So
do you want to see that?
No, I want to see you.
Do you want to see that?
Hey. I'll stand next to you and watch that. Are you kidding me?
You're coming in.
Yeah, you're kidding me. We've got a lot of great, our friends are coming to town. I live in New Orleans, as a lot of the listeners know. Yep. And Jazz Fest is really huge here in New Orleans. It's coming up. Springo's coming with Neil Young. Opie's coming with the Rolling Stones. Ski's coming with the Foo Fighters.
That's right.
Ski's coming with the Foo Fighters.
That's a big weekend, isn't it?
It's going to be awesome. I'm going to be buying a lot of dinners. I'll tell you that.
Are you going to record this,
Matt? Record. Anything. I'm recording right now.
With all these assholes being in the same place at the same time.
Oh yeah. No, I'm not. No, I mean it's unless Chris wants to pull them all together and we can do something. Sure.
That would be awesome.
What are the dates? Maybe I'll come to New Orleans.
We got to do that. I don't know my date. Wait a second.
When is the Jazz Fest, Chris? What are the dates on that?
It's like the last weekend of April, the first weekend of May, and everything in between.
Saturday the 4th, we're playing New Orleans.
Nice. Nice. Well, I will see you just before then.
I can't wait.
Yeah, it's exciting. Nice. Exciting, man.
Hey, Matt, you going to come up?
I'll talk to Chris. I'll look at my calendar. If he'll let me crash on his couch for a little bit.
Yeah, I'll take you to dinner. Awesome.
I see a guitar there. I see a guitar in the background.
Yeah.
Are you a muso?
I'm aspiring to. I've tried to pick up the guitar probably 5 times in the past, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. And this year, it's stuck. I practice every day. I've been practicing every day since the beginning of the year. And I'm trying. I'm trying really hard, you know. So theory.
You got a piano in your house?
I don't have one in my house, no. My girlfriend's got one. So, but I'm thinking about getting a keyboard to help me. I'm also doing some ear training too, which is
hard. You need a keyboard. Fuck that guitar.
But that's what I want to learn how to play. But as far as ear training is concerned, the keyboard.
I have a piano here at the house.
Yeah.
I don't know how to play anything. But you can hear it different on a piano.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, you know, I'm here. Let me show you this. This is a project. And Chris, this might take you back. But I bought a Tele body. I'm showing on the camera, everybody, an American-made Tele body. And I've got a roasted maple neck. So I'm building.
Oh, nice.
I'm building up an electric guitar. I've got the electronics here. I'm trying to figure out what pickups I'm going to put in it. And
just start going to gigs that Spriggo and I do and just take stuff.
Don't you know anybody?
No, I don't know shit. I know Chris. I haven't been in the industry in a long time. So I unlike you, Spriggo, although I do love music. I got that bug from Chris. He instilled that on me back in the early 70s. It started with Kiss and Blue Oyster Cult and all that silly shit. You know, but yeah, no, I love listening. I mean, even just making sounds, chords on piano or the guitar. I just love the sound of it. So that's why I've decided I want to learn how to play.
That's great, Matt. I take time to listen to music every day, and I don't just have it on in the background. I sit and I listen to it. I concentrate on what I'm listening to. I do that at least once a day.
Yep. You're a way better man than I.
No, it's just what I do. I mean, what's your thing? You're a golfer, right?
Yes.
See, you put that same kind of passion into golf that I put into music. It's some people put it into cooking. Some people put it into jogging. Some people put it into yoga. It's just, you know.
Yeah. Mine's bike racing. I train and race like it's a full-time job. So, but music is something I do to get me through it. So, yeah.
You're healthy. You listen to music. I do nothing.
When you play golf, do you walk or do you ride?
Walk.
See, there you go. There's your exercise.
I walk every morning. It's as you say, guys. It has to be that vacuum that stops, right? Mm-hmm. And 2.5 miles later, I come back.
It's good.
The phone's been ringing the whole fucking time, especially for you, Kenzie. You got a big show. Right.
Well,
you got a big show and your phone probably never stops.
I turn the ringer off on my phone. I've been doing it for years.
Doesn't mean they don't call you.
Yeah. But, you know, if it's ringing and I see it, I'll pick it up. But if I don't, I'll get back to them. You know, I just can't have my phone ringing and ringing all day long. It would drive me insane. It would just drive me insane. The sound of it.
Think about this, and this is good for Matt. 15 years ago, you would never have said that.
That's true. I don't think you could turn the ringer off on a phone 15 years ago.
One, you didn't have that phone, but you were hoping people would fucking call you, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, we're all in a good place. This is one of the greatest conversations I've ever had.
Oh,
I don't know what you're going to do with this, Matt, but I don't give a shit. Right? Put it out there. I don't care. Right? I didn't swear enough, or I can't send it to my mother. Right? So,
yeah. Well, you definitely brought the Boston attitude that we all miss.
So, that's true. That's a good point, man. That is exactly.
No, I never thought about it that way.
Oh, yeah. I'm like going, this is great. This is like Boston. This is amazing. So people who don't know Boston personalities and attitude. You brought it in spades today, Springo.
Yeah. So. That's right field bleachers in Fenway Park. That's what that is.
Yes, it is. Getting in a fight, yep. Throwing beer at each other. Oh, I've been there.
Oh, funny. Well, I can't thank you enough for spending the time with us, man. This has been fucking amazing.
Greatest thing.
A lot of fun.
This is really good.
Yeah, I had to throw a couple fucks in there so you just wouldn't be the only one.
That's all right.
And I've talked more than ever.
Yeah, this is great.
And I think I even.
But no, I need you, Matt.
I appreciate that.
Immediate. You're right. You're the middle guy for the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, brother, I can't wait for you to come to New Orleans Jazz Fest. I'll be looking for you. I'll be waiting for your call. And you let me know what day you have off, and I'm gonna take you out to an incredible local meal.
May 3rd.
Count on it. I'm writing it down right now. May 3rd. Springo, stupidly great meal. I'm writing that down.
Oh, yeah.
All right, guys. Well, hey, that was fantastic.
Hey, Springo. Thank you very much, Kansies, plural.
Good to see you, man.
It has really been good.
Fantastic. Well, let's hope, we'll get a few thousand listens and, be awesome.
Is that what you're looking for, Matt? I'll ding my entire family to look at this.
Well, if you're coming from Boston, I suspect that's a pretty sizable crew then, huh?
Yeah, you'll get about 25. Awesome. Just tell me. I'll look. My mother will look as long as
we'll send you all the particulars and we'll dot all the I's and cross all the T's.
I'll send it out in a second.
Yeah, right. we're awful at promoting the podcast. It's like it when the guests
don't
do it.
Don't think that. No, let's push it out.
Okay. Yeah.
Not because of me. Let's just push it out because it's a good thing. Right.
Absolutely. You know what? You know, our stories are important. You know, they need to be archived. This is one way of doing it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you said that, Chris. And, you know, to kind of wrap this whole thing up and you know, I was talking to someone earlier this week about this whole thing. And it really, really means something because I was starting to look at seeing how many of these downloads we've got, how many of these podcasts we've got. And, you know, we are documenting and chronicling, I think, something that is amazing. And everybody's got a story and I think it matters. And I think people can relate to it. And so it's good stuff. And so, you know, all that being said, Springo, thanks a lot for coming on and taking the time and hanging out with us.
I couldn't do anything better in my day.
Yeah. And
absolutely.
And Chris, this is in my life, quite frankly.
Thank you.
I've known Kenzie a long time. So this is
wonderful.
This is the right thing to do.
Right. Excellent. On. Excellent. Well, much love and respect to you, brother. And I'll talk and see you soon.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Right on. And for the listeners out there, thanks for joining us. And please, again, like, subscribe, leave some comments and all that stuff. And we can't wait to get the next one out there to you. All right, guys, take care.
And thanks to Dan Cleary for our music.
Absolutely. Can't pass that up. Thanks, Dan. See you.
See you guys.
See you.